That's why I made it clear that I'm attracted to you, too. So we would be even.
We will never be even, she ground out. Not when I can't hear you. I can't believe you.
She lowered her head into her hands and groaned.
I'm so embarrassed, mortified. Where can I crawl into a hole? Should I throw myself off the barge and swim ashore? We're not that far from Eberron. I could be there before nightfall.
Gwen, relax. She glowered at him.
How can I relax when you've been invading my privacy? How dare you?
I didn't do it on purpose. Your mind is so open, it's like you're shouting at me.
You want to hear shouting?
Her voice rose again. Gwen. He touched her shoulder.
Don't touch me!
She jumped to her feet and stumbled a second before grabbing onto the table.
Goodness, I drank too much.
He reached out to steady her, but she slapped his hand away.
Don't, and stop invading my mind.
I never wanted to. He stood and leaned toward her to whisper, Surely you agree that it's better for me to tell you now than to let the situation continue as it is.
You should have been honest from the beginning.
Holy goddesses, have I been a fool? Brigitte warned me he has a great deal of secrets, and I know he's capable of deception. The scoundrel. If I was truly a scoundrel, I would never have told you the truth.
He heard me. What else are you not telling me?
I'll tell you everything you'll need to know in order to help me. Her eyes narrowed.
That means you plan to keep something secret.
He winced. I will be as honest as I possibly can.
That's not very reassuring.
It should be. If I do keep something secret, it's because it will be dangerous for you to know. But that only makes me more curious. She looked away. He groaned inwardly. If she found out the biggest secret of Norveshka, she would not be allowed to leave. And then she would really resent him. He would have to make sure she stayed focused on the health problems. It was her curiosity about the dragons that was dangerous.
I'm not sure I can trust you, she muttered.
I realize that, but I will do my best to protect you. First, we need to protect your privacy. He stepped closer. Let me show you how to build a shield.
Leave me alone!
She backed away.
I want to be alone for a while.
She rushed to the side of the barge and grasped the railing.
Dear goddesses, what have I gotten myself into?
With a sigh, Silas sat down and refilled his cup. This hadn't gone well, but he would have to be a fool to think it could have gone any other way.
Don't think about him, he'll hear you,
Gwenor admonished herself.
Wait, so what if he does? Then he'll know what you really think, that he's a rotten scoundrel, a low-down, dirty rat of a stinking bastard.
Behind her she heard a cough as he choked on his wine, and she smiled to herself. Taking a deep breath, she attempted to calm her nerves. 1 month. That was all she had promised the filthy bastard. She would concentrate on figuring out how the queen was being poisoned, and she'd work with the women he had mentioned, Lady Margosha and the army physician, Annika. For the most part, she would completely ignore the sorry, rotten bastard. She'd pretend that he didn't even exist. He cleared his throat behind her. A wicked temptation to take revenge popped into her mind. Did she dare? Why not? He deserved it. She closed her eyes and envisioned herself sauntering up to him and shoving her discarded chair out of the way. Then, ever so slowly, she would lift up her skirt till she could straddle his legs and settle in his lap. Then she would stroke her fingers down his cheek, and when his green eyes glittered with heated desire, she would pull her hand back and slap him silly. Not funny, he growled. She glanced back, affecting an innocent look. Is something wrong? When he stared back at her, her heart stuttered in her chest. Goodness, the gleam in his eyes was even hotter than she'd imagined. She turned back to gaze at the shoreline. Two could get burned playing that game. Don't think about him. She concentrated on the shoreline and the hillside covered with thick forest. Behind the hill there were peaks of mountains covered with snow. Such a breathtakingly beautiful country. The scent of pine and spruce trees wafted toward her on a cool, fresh breeze. So many trees. No wonder there were tales to warn children not to wander off. But were the mountain trolls real? The illustrations in Tarushki's bedtime tales of a mountain troll had shown them as short, swarthy-looking creatures with long, bushy hair and beards, bulbous noses, pointed teeth and bare feet. They dressed in dirty furs and never bathed. They probably stank as bad as the bastards sitting behind her. He sighed loud enough that she could hear. Don't think about him. So did the mountain trolls truly exist? She focused on the view in front of her and strained her ears. As an elf, she'd always had better hearing than her sisters. There was the lapping of waves against the barge, and the rhythmic swooshing sound of oars, but she listened beyond that. Once again she heard a whispering sound, murmurs carried to her over a soft breeze. She glanced up. There was only the one silent dragon overhead. These were multiple voices, and they seemed to be coming from the forest. Can you hear me? She asked mentally, and a chorus of soft voices wafted into her mind. Who was that? She is not one of us. Ignore her. She must not be one of the barbarians. They cannot hear us. She must be an elf. Then she is far from home. Gwenor had counted at least five voices. They weren't speaking Norveshki, but something akin to the language of Woodwin. Who are you? She asked, mentally and elfish. She is elf. Why is she in the land of barbarians? My name is Gwenor. May I ask... Are you communicating with someone? General Dravenko asked, as he approached the railing where she was standing. She gave him a curious look. You're not hearing them, Lord General? Call me Silas, he whispered. What do you mean, them? How many are there? I've counted more than five. Some are male and others female. I'm hearing only half of the conversation, your half. You were using elfish. Have some elves invaded my country? I don't think so. Gwenor turned her attention back to the forest. May I ask who you are? We are many. We are the kings. Kings of the forest. You mean your trees? Gwenor asked. Trees? The general gave her an incredulous look. Are you seriously? She lifted a hand to stop him when the voices continued. Do not confuse us with the twigs. They are not sentient. We are the kings. We tower over the twigs. Then I will find you in the forest, Gwenor asked mentally. Where? You cannot miss us. We stretch from the southern sea of Woodwind to the far reaches of the frozen north. We are taller than the castles built by barbarians. We are older than the ancient ones. Who are the ancient ones? Gwenor asked. The first dragons who flourished 1,000 years ago. They were destroyed 500 years ago, replaced by the new dragons. "Is this a game you're playing on me?" the general interrupted with a worried look. "Are you getting revenge? Or did you have so much wine you're imagining?" "I'm not drunk," Gwynor muttered, "and I'm not making it up. They call themselves the Kings of the Forest. They say they are taller than castles and older than the ancient ones. Do you know of any extremely tall trees?" His eyes narrowed. "The giant redwoods? Are they tall?" He nodded. "And rumored to be ancient. But they're trees, for light's sake. I never thought they could speak. Are you sure you're communicating with them?" She turned back to the forest. "How is it possible for me to hear you? Are you elf?" "You must be elf. Only a few elves can hear us." "I am elf," Gwynor admitted. "You are far from home. Are you the giant redwoods?" she asked. "That is what the barbarians call us. They are young and ignorant. They know not what they do." "They are the redwoods," Gwynor told the general. He took a deep breath. "Then you're really talking to trees. I would have never believed it possible." "They said only a few elves can communicate with them." "But you can hear dragons, too," he muttered. "I'll ask about that. Kings of the Forest, do you know any elves who can talk to the dragons?" "No. Elves talk only to us. Some of the barbarians can talk to the dragons. Only the cursed barbarians." The general leaned close. "What did they say?" "According to the redwoods, the only ones who can communicate with the dragons are the cursed barbarians." His brows lifted. "Barbarians?" She smiled sweetly. "That's what they call you, my lord," he snorted. "When are you going to call me Silas? You're missing the point here, my lord. You can stop worrying that the elves are able to communicate with your precious dragons." "That is a relief." He gave her a wry look. "Although I'm still dealing with one very stubborn elf who refuses to say my name, but can communicate with both dragons and trees." "I could hear you too if you dropped your shield." He tilted his head, watching her carefully. "You said we wouldn't be even unless you could hear my thoughts. Is that what it'll take to ease your anger? Shall I let you hear me?" Her breath caught. Was he serious? "I'm very serious, but I should warn you, I'm not a tree." "What does that mean?" she wondered. "That he has the thoughts of a man?" He nodded. "Are you willing to hear exactly how much I want you?" With a gasp, she stepped back. "Don't say that." "Then learn how to build a shield. Because the more I listen to your thoughts, the more I'm tempted to do every damned thing I've been imagining. And believe me, I'm barbarian enough to do it." Her cheeks blazed with heat as she turned away. "Don't think about him. What is bothering you, elf?" The redwoods were still hearing her, Gwynor thought. And the general and his friends, and the dragons, and if she didn't construct a shield, she would never have privacy again. "All right, my lord, I'll do it." "Silas," he growled. She felt as if she was sinking, drowning. "Silas." Gwynor was exhausted both physically and mentally by the time they arrived at Draven Castle. Her rear end ached from another long ride on a horse, and her mind was tired from constantly building a wall. The act itself was easy enough to do. She only had to imagine herself constructing a wall, brick by brick, around her thoughts. The problem was, she was never quite sure if she was doing a proper job, so she kept building it over and over. Silas had assured her he could no longer hear her thoughts, but the scoundrel hadn't exactly proven himself trustworthy. She found herself calling him a bastard every 5 minutes, just to see if he reacted. They'd spent the rest of the trip coming up with plans, and they hoped to get started soon. When they dismounted in the courtyard of Draven Castle, Dimitri met them there and told Silas that His Majesty wanted to speak to him. "I'll take care of your guest," a woman's voice called out as she hurried across the courtyard. Gwenor turned toward her. She looked perhaps 50 years of age, with grey streaks in her red hair and a few wrinkles on her brow and around her eyes. But she was still slender and moved quickly. She flashed a smile at Gwenor, then stopped next to the general. "Margosha." Silas greeted her with a kiss on the cheek. "We'll talk later." "Yes, don't leave the king waiting." She waved him off, then turned to Gwenor. "I've been looking forward to meeting you." "Pleased to meet you, my lady," Gwenor curtsied. "No need for formalities. Please call me Margosha." She linked an arm through Gwenor's and led her toward the entrance to the southern wing. "So did you return the little princess?"
"Yes. Eviana is back with her parents."
"Excellent." Margosha lowered her voice. "Thank you for coming back. We need all the help we can get." "I'm concerned about you tasting a Majesty's food and drink. It could be dangerous." Margosha's eyes softened. "You're a sweet girl, but I believe you're the brave one. Silas told me how you hitched a ride with a dragon." Gwenor snorted. "Not that brave. I was clinging to Puff for dear life."
"Puff?
The dragon who saved me and brought me here."
"You named him Puff?"
Margosha's mouth twitched. "I can't imagine him liking that."
"You know him?"
"Of course. Come, let me show you to your room." Margosha led her toward the double doors. Gwenor glanced back at the western wing. "I was over there before, in the nursery."
"Yes, but you're not playing the role of a nanny this time."
Margosha opened the doors. "I had all your clothing moved over here."
"I see."
Gwenor followed her up a flight of stairs. This wing was much more decorated than the western one. Portraits lined the walls, and every now and then a small table was topped with a vase full of flowers. "The royal apartments and those of all the ladies in waiting are here in the southern wing," Margosha explained as she led her down a corridor. "It's warmer, and Her Majesty enjoys having a view of the garden." Gwenor nodded. She would need to investigate the garden. Whoever was poisoning the queen could be using some of the plants that were growing there. "You must be tired from the journey. A nice hot bath is what you need." Margosha opened a carved wooden door on the left. "I'm afraid it's not one of the best rooms. You'll only have a view of the courtyard."
"That's quite all right."
Gwenor stepped inside, and her mouth dropped open. The bedchamber was huge and richly furnished. The bed, with 4 massive posts of carved oak, was set up on a dais and surrounded by curtains of shimmering red silk. A coverlet of red velvet spread across the wide expanse of the bed. Across from the bed, a fire burned in a hearth of polished pink marble. 2 chairs, upholstered in red velvet, sat in front of the hearth. Between the 2 chairs, a delicately carved wooden table rested, topped with a vase of pink glass that held 12 red roses.
Will it do? Margosha asked. It's beautiful, Gwen murmured, as her slippers sank into a red, thick carpet. Margosha smiled. I'm so glad you like it. She motioned to the red velvet curtains across the room. The windows overlooking the courtyard are there. Now, let me show you the dressing room. She strode toward a door to the left of the hearth. Inside, Gwenor gawked at the size of the marble tub. Across from it, shelves lined a wall. I put all your gowns and clothing there. Margosha motioned to the shelves, then to a dressing table. And I made sure you would have everything you need.
Thank you.
Gwenor ran her fingers over a silver hairbrush and toothbrush. I heated up some water for you. Margosha lifted a kettle off a small stove, then poured it into the tub. Steam rose into the air. Your maid will keep this stove hot, so you can have hot water whenever you want.
My maid?
Margosha nodded. Nisa asked to be your maid. Is that all right?
Yes.
Gwenor turned on a faucet and marveled at the water that gushed into the tub.
This is so amazing.
You don't have that in Eberron? Gwenor shook her head. It's nice, but unfortunately the water is always cold. Margosha filled the kettle again and placed it on the stove. Shall I call Nisa for you?
I can manage if you'll help with the laces.
Of course. Margosha motioned for her to turn around. Did you know I was there when Sorcha was born? She was such a beautiful baby. Gwenor sighed. She's still beautiful. And I miss her already.
Did Silas get to see her?
Yes. That's good. Margosha tisked. You poor thing, your back is bruised.
It happened when Puff caught me.
You need a nice long soak. There. Finished.
Thank you.
Gwenor slipped out of her gown and draped it on the back of the chair by her dressing table. I'll leave you alone, then. Margosha headed for the bedchamber door, and I'll send Nisa to you in about an hour.
Thank you.
Gwenor noticed another door on the far side of the shelves.
Where does that door lead to?
Margosha paused halfway into Gwenor's bedchamber. Another dressing room. It belongs to Silas, of course. What? Gwenor stiffened. His bedchamber is next door to yours. Margosha explained with an amused look on her face. It's the best way to convince everyone that you're lovers.
But we're not.
Gwenor ran over to the door. There was no lock. She turned back to Margosha, but the woman had left.
Good goddesses.
Gwenor cracked open the door. It was dark inside. She closed it, then wedged a chair under the knob. Then she shoved the dressing table up against the door. With a wary glance at the blocked door, she slipped out of her shift. Her skin pebbled with goose flesh, and she glanced down at herself. Her breasts felt full and heavy. The nipples tightened into hard buds. Because she was cold, she thought, not because she was wondering what Silas would think of her. Are you willing to hear exactly how much I want you? His words echoed in her mind. She unbraided her hair and let the long, white blonde tresses hang loose to her narrow waist. Lovers. Don't think about him. She climbed into the tub and sighed as the heated water caressed her skin. I'm tempted to do every damned thing I've been imagining. She shuddered. No doubt Silas had a very healthy imagination. She glanced at the blocked door. What would happen if she left the door open? Did she dare?
Chapter 11.
Silas and Dimitri headed across the courtyard for the king's offices in the northern wing.
"I can't hear Lady Gwenor's thoughts anymore," Dimitri whispered. "You must have taught her how to build a shield."
Silas nodded.
"Then you must have told her we could hear her thoughts."
Dimitri jumped in front of him and looked him over.
"No black eyes? She didn't clobber you?"
Silas gave his friend an annoyed look.
"Did you see anything today?"
"Changing the subject, huh? So, how pissed was she?"
Enough to torment Silas with images of her sitting in his lap and caressing his face. She'd nearly killed him.
"She took it well."
Dimitri snorted.
"Right. So how much did you have to grovel?"
He snickered when Silas punched him on the shoulder.
"Did you see anything?"
Silas asked again.
Dimitri nodded. "Someone sneaked away from the Eberoni camp and crossed the border, making his way north. He looked like a priest."
Silas narrowed his eyes.
"I don't think Leofric sent him. Not when he was able to pass a message to King Petrus directly through me."
"And if Leofric didn't send him, then who did?"
"I'll keep watch to see whom the priest contacts."
Dimitri opened the door to the northern wing and glanced around to make sure they were alone.
"Why did Alexei go to the army camp? Are you expecting a problem with the elves?"
Silas stepped inside.
"He's bringing Annika here."
Dimitri froze for a moment, then slammed the door shut with more force than necessary.
"Why?"
"She's trustworthy and has a good supply of medicinal herbs."
Silas gave his friend a sympathetic look. "It can't be helped. I made a deal with the king and I have to deliver."
Dimitri sighed.
"Fine."
Silas strode toward his brother's offices with Dimitri trudging along beside him.
"If Lord Romac is there, keep him busy. I don't want him eavesdropping."
Dimitri nodded.
When they stepped into the outer office, Lord Romac looked up from his desk and pasted a fake smile on his weasel-like face.
"His Majesty wants to see me," Silas said.
Lord Romac stood and bowed.
"I am aware of that, Lord General."
His beady eyes narrowed.
"I heard you brought the elfin woman back with you."
"Of course," Silas smiled. "Lady Gwenor and I are inseparable."
Lord Romac slanted a sly look at Dimitri.
"I wonder if your dear friend, Colonel Tolenko, approves. After all, his uncle was probably murdered by those vicious elves."
Dimitri stiffened.
"If my uncle is indeed dead, then he died in service to his country and his memory should be honored."
"Of course."
Lord Romac folded his hands over his stomach, his numerous rings sparkling in the dim candlelight as he bowed low.
Silas knocked on the door to his brother's office, then entered.
Petrus looked up from his desk.
"You're back."
He set down his quill and rose to his feet while Silas made a quick bow.
"So you returned the princess?"
"Yes."
Silas removed two letters he'd secreted inside his leather vest.
"These are from the kings Leofric and Ulfred. They were both very grateful for the child's safe return."
Petrus circled his desk and reached for the letters.
"Then they didn't know that I'm the one responsible for the kidnapping?"
"No. I told them it was a rogue dragon."
Petrus unfolded the first letter and read it, then the second one.
"They want peace and prosperity for all the people of our countries."
Silas nodded.
Today's act went a long way toward ensuring them that we want the same thing. With a sigh, Petrus dropped the letters on his desk. But it's not what Fafnir wants. Not this again. Silas gritted his teeth. It had taken him an hour last night to convince his brother that following the dictates of a dragon were not in his best interests. You're the king here. You know what's best for your people, and it certainly isn't war. We can't afford to lose any more of our population. Petrus rubbed his brow. But the curse! I told you. Silas stepped closer to him. I will get rid of it. Give me 1 month. That's all I ask. You'll make Freya healthy again. Yes, Silas nodded. I'm bringing together a team of the best healers I can find. Trust me, brother. Petrus regarded him sadly. I do trust you. But Fafnir doesn't. He thinks you want the throne for yourself. I was raised to be a soldier, not a king. I won't let you down, Petrus. The king sighed. 1 month, then. That was our agreement. Get rid of the curse. Make Freya well again. But if you fail... I know. Silas clenched his fists. We'll do as Fafnir wants. Petrus nodded. We'll invade Woodwin and attack Turin. Over my dead body, Silas thought. He had 1 month to set things right and figure out if this damned Fafnir was a hoax. I'll get right to work. Petrus wandered back to his desk. Fine. You may go. On the way to his room, Silas whispered to Dimitri, Did you keep Romac from listening at the door? Didn't need to. Turns out he wanted to talk to me in private. Dimitri withdrew a small dagger from his sleeve. He gave me this. What the hell? Silas eyed the sharp dagger. Does he expect you to assassinate me? Not me. Dimitri slid the dagger back up his sleeve. He's hoping Lady Gwenor will do it. What? Dimitri smirked. Romac laid a huge wager on when the elfin woman would stab you to death in your sleep. He asked me to pass the dagger on to her and encourage her to wait till tomorrow night to do the deed. If she does as I ask, he'll give me 10% of his winnings. Silas scoffed. Ridiculous. I know, Dimitri grinned. I held out for 25%. Silas cuffed him on the shoulder. Dimitri laughed. Don't worry, I won't give her the dagger. Go ahead and do it. Are you kidding? When she's pissed at you? Silas shot him an annoyed look. She might need it for self-defense. From you? Silas punched him harder. I would never hurt her. No, you just lie and deceive and sod off. Dimitri grinned. I'll go then. See you at dinner. Gwenor was dressed in a shift and lounging in front of the hearth, drying her hair, when Nyssa arrived to help her dress for dinner. It's good to see you again, Gwenor smiled at her. Thank you for agreeing to be my maid. Nyssa blushed. The other maids are afraid of you, my lady, but I told them you're actually nice. Unfortunately, they're still convinced that you'll murder your lover. Excuse me? Nyssa bit her lip. Maybe I shouldn't have mentioned that. How about a blue gown, since it's Sapphire Day? It would look lovely with your eyes. Gwenor followed her into the dressing room. People are saying I'm going to murder General Dravenko. Nyssa glanced at the chair and dressing table pushed up against the door to Silas's dressing room.
Oh, my. Is the affair over?
No, it... Oh, thank the light. I can't imagine anyone turning down an affair with the General. He's so handsome.
Nisa selected a blue velvet gown. But I heard no one wants to marry him or Dimitri, Gwenor said, as the gown slid over her shoulders.
Or Alexei, Nisa added, because of you know what.
The curse of the three clans? Nisa grimaced and looked around. We're alone here, Nisa. I hope to get rid of the curse, but it will be hard to do if I don't learn more about it.
Nisa grabbed onto the gold-painted wooden orb that hung from the leather thong around her neck.
May the light protect us.
There could be no harm in simply repeating the story, Gwen insisted. Can you tell me how the curse started?
It was 500 years ago, Nisa whispered, when the Ancient Ones ruled the skies and the country.
Gwenor recalled that the giant redwoods had referred to the Ancient Ones.
Who are the Ancient Ones? The first dragons.
Nisa leaned close.
They were vicious and hoarded all the gold and jewels for themselves. If the Norveshki people didn't mine the mountains and give the dragons enough gold and precious jewels, the dragons would set their villages ablaze.
That sounds terrible.
Oh, it was.
Nisa nodded, her eyes wide.
We were like slaves. But about 500 years ago, the dragons became lazy. All they wanted to do was lie about their caves, wallowing in piles of gold and jewels. And that's when a wealthy man named Magnus made a deal with them. Magnus owned several mountains that were said to be full of rubies and emeralds. If his 7 sons mined the mountains for the dragons, then the dragons would let him rule over the Norveshki people in their stead, as long as he did whatever the dragons told him to do.
Gwenor nodded.
So this Magnus made himself king?
Yes, although he was more like a puppet for the dragons.
Nisa tightened the laces on Gwenor's gown as she continued. But then something terrible happened. One of the mountains caved in while the 7 sons were inside, and the oldest 2 were killed.
So 5 of them survived? Gwenor asked.
They were injured terribly, Nisa whispered. Magnus was afraid they would die, and he would have no heir to the throne, so he begged the dragons to help him. And one of them, by the name of Fafnir, said he would help.
How?
Nisa hesitated. I dare not say. But 2 more of the brothers died because of it. Only 3 of them survived what Fafnir did. Their names were Draven, Tolan, and Maren. Even though they lived, they blamed the dragons for the deaths of their brothers. So eventually they rebelled against the Ancient Ones and overthrew them. It made the old dragons furious, so they cursed the 3 brothers and their progeny for all eternity.
So the 3 cursed clans are the descendants of those 3 brothers.
Nisa nodded. The Dravenko clan is descended from Draven. And then there's the Tolenko clan and Marenko clan.
So Dimitri was from the Tolenko clan, and Alexei from the Marenko, Gwenor thought. It made sense, since she knew the word ko in Norveshki meant son of. And women are afraid to marry into those clans?
With a wince, Nisa touched the golden bead on her necklace. According to the curse, the descendant's seed will shrivel and die, and all those who thirst for power will go mad. So it is believed that any woman who marries into the 3 clans is doomed. She'll lose her children, go insane, or die a terrible death.
Quinor scoffed. Obviously, some of the children have survived, or the clans wouldn't still be here after 500 years.
Oh, Nisa tilted her head, considering. Well, there aren't that many descendants. You can usually tell who the men are, since they all tend to have black hair.
Quinor recalled that most of the people she'd seen in Oveshka had either red or blonde hair. And from what she'd seen of the villages, it appeared that infant mortality might be a serious problem for the entire country. I noticed when we were traveling today that there aren't many children in any of the villages. Nisa heaved a mournful sigh.
That's because the curse has spread beyond the three clans, and now the whole country is suffering.
But I doubt a curse could do that. It would make more sense if it was caused by something like the plague that swept through the country about 20 years ago.
Nisa hung her head. Even if that's true, everyone believes the plague is simply part of the curse. Women all over the country are having trouble conceiving children.
Quinor swallowed hard. No wonder Silas was desperate. If the Noveshki were suffering from widespread infertility, the country would not survive.
Thank you for telling me, Nisa. I will do my best to help.
Thank you.
Nisa selected a pair of blue slippers. I knew you couldn't be vicious, like the others say.
Quinor rolled her eyes, then slipped her feet into the blue velvet shoes. All this time spent dressing up seemed like a waste. She and Silas had made plans on the journey, and she was eager to set them into motion.
Come and sit. Nisa motioned to the chair. We need to do your hair.
Quinor winced when she realized Nisa had moved the table and chair away from the general's dressing room door. Now the rascal could come inside whenever he pleased. Once Nisa had arranged her hair on top of her head, she stepped back.
All done. What do you think?
Quinor took a deep breath. She'd never looked this good before.
You worked a miracle.
Thank you. Nisa snorted.
Not really. Once I got used to your pointed ears, I realized how beautiful you are. It's no wonder the general fell for you.
I wish. The thought made Quinor grow still and stare at herself in the mirror. Did she really want Silas to fall for her? What did he really think of her? With her hair up, her neck seemed long and slender, and the cut of the gown made her waist seem tiny and her breasts practically pop out. He had said he was attracted to her, and even though a part of her had thrilled at his words, another part had suspected he was merely using flattery in order to gain her cooperation. She sighed. The last 2.5 years that she'd spent in Eberron and Turin had made her distrustful of anyone other than her sisters.
Hello?
A female voice called out from the bedchamber.
Yes?
Quinor strode into the bedchamber and discovered Lady Olenka, dressed in a dark blue silk gown. She wore a matching blue ribbon around her neck with a small sapphire. She was also wearing 2 small sapphire rings. Of course, Quinor thought. It was Sapphire Day.
Why, look at you!
Lady Olenka clasped her hands together.
You look fabulous!
Quinor blushed.
Thank you.
Olenka waved a hand at Nisa.
You may go.
As Nisa hurried from the room, Olenka's gaze drifted over Quinor.
Oh, dear. Oh, no.
She pressed a hand to her chest as a look of horror crossed her face.
I am shocked. Shocked and appalled.
Why? What's wrong?
You have absolutely no jewels,
Olenka cried.
Not even a single ring.
I'm not accustomed to wearing.
This is unbelievable.
Olenka fanned herself as if she were ready to faint from the shock. How can the general call himself your lover and not give you any jewelry?
Well, it's insulting. How dare he treat you like that?
Olenka stepped closer and lowered her voice. No wonder people are saying you're going to murder him in his sleep.
I would never...
Oh, I know. Olenka touched her shoulder and gave her a sympathetic look. All those terrible people wagering that you'll stab the general to death in his sleep. I mean, really, who could kill the man? He's so gorgeous. Actually, I wouldn't stab anyone, regardless of their looks.
Of course not,
Olenka sighed dramatically. As your close friend, I know you're not the sort to go about killing someone.
Well, thank you, I appreciate that.
What are friends for? Olenka waved a dismissive hand. I'll have you know that I refuse to participate in any wagers that you would kill the general. Everyone thought I was being foolish, but I bet that you would only wound the general.
Gwenor blinked.
What? A small wound, that's all I ask. Just between us friends, all right? Olenka winked.
You expect me to stab him?
Just a flesh wound. 2 nights from tonight. Olenka drew a small jeweled dagger from her sleeve. Isn't it lovely? It's my gift to you. I don't really need... Oh, I'm sure you have your own knives, but I wanted to be helpful.
Olenka dashed over to the bed and slipped the dagger underneath a pillow.
There. Now you're all set. You won't let me down, right?
A knock sounded at the door, then Lady Margosha entered carrying a blue velvet bag.
Oh, you wore blue. Perfect.
She nodded at Olenka.
Don't you both look lovely tonight?
Thank you.
Olenka eyed the velvet bag. What do you have there?
A small gift from General Dravenko.
With a smile, Margosha opened the bag. This necklace belonged to his mother.
Olenka gasped when Margosha pulled out a sparkling necklace of sapphires and diamonds.
With a gulp, Gwenor stepped back. I shouldn't have something that belonged to his mother. It should go to Sorcha.
Now, you know how fond the general is of you.
Margosha fitted the necklace around Gwenor's neck. And here is the matching ring.
With her heart pounding, Gwenor slipped on the sapphire ring.
This couldn't mean anything.
Silas was just playing his role as her lover.
When she left in a month, she would give these back to him.
And say goodbye.
The thought made her heart tighten. There's no one else like him. No one makes my heart race like him. The scoundrel. No one exasperated her like him.
They're magnificent, Olenka cried, eyeing the jewels with an astounded look.
Yes, Margosha smiled. The general is quite generous.
With a wince, Olenka leaned close and whispered, Don't hurt him too much. Just a tiny scratch, all right?
Excuse me? Margosha asked.
It's nothing.
Olenka dashed from the room. Margosha shook her head. Silas wanted me to escort you to the Great Hall for dinner. Are you ready?
Yes.
Gwenor took a deep breath to steady her nerves and followed Margosha into the hallway.
Will there be many people there?
Just the usual courtiers. Margosha led the way down the hall toward the western wing. But there is a group of traveling minstrels here tonight, so after dinner there will be some dancing.
I see.
Margosha leaned close. Silas explained the plan you came up with. He thinks tonight will be the perfect time for us to do it. The Queen will be busy at the dance tonight, so her dressing room will be vacant. I have readied everything we'll need to test her clothing and jewels.
Excellent. Thank you.
Gwenor smiled at Margosha. I'm quite eager to get on with our investigation. Silas is eager, too. Margosha led her down some stairs. After we reach the Great Hall, I'll have to leave you for a while. I need to taste everything before it's taken to the royal table.
It worries me that you do that.
Margosha squeezed her hand. Don't let it concern you. I'm glad to be of service.
Silas is lucky to have you.
He's a good man.
Hero or scoundrel, Gwenor thought. Perhaps a bit of both.
When they reached the western wing, Gwenor paused a moment at the entrance. The great hall took up the entire length of the wing. A vaulted ceiling soared 2 floors overhead. As she glanced at the ceiling, she realized that the nursery was overhead. A balcony at the back of the great hall was filled with the minstrels who were tuning their instruments. At the front of the hall, a dais held a long table with 3 gilded chairs. Over each chair, a coronet of jewels hung from the ceiling. Down each side of the great hall, there was a line of smaller tables and chairs. The center of the room was left vacant. For dancing, Gwenor assumed. On the side, facing the outside of the castle, long windows overlooked the village of Dreshka. 3 enormous chandeliers hung from the high ceiling, providing several tiers of candles to illuminate the large room. More flames flickered in the candles of numerous wall sconces. Margosha pointed at Dmitri, who was standing by a small table close to the dais. You can eat there with the colonel. That table is reserved for nobles.
I'm not noble, Gwenor whispered.
You are here. Margosha leaned close. And as the general's mistress, you automatically have a higher rank than the other women here. Except the queen, of course. Gwenor swallowed hard. Already she could see other courtiers eyeing her suspiciously. She looked around, but Silas was nowhere to be found. I'll see you soon. Margosha rushed away. Gwenor squared her shoulders. After one more check that her mental shield was solidly in place, she strode toward Dmitri. My lady? A thin man with beady dark eyes stepped in front of her and bowed low. May I introduce myself? I am Lord Romac, personal secretary to His Majesty the King. Gwenor curtsied. A pleasure to meet you, my lord. He gave her a brittle smile. I must admit to a certain curiosity about you, my dear. General Dravenko has never brought a mistress to court before. He usually keeps his women at the army camp, where they belong.
Is that so?
Gwenor affected a bored look, even though the man's rudeness was making her tense. How long have you been with the general? Romac asked. Gwenor waved a dismissive hand. I doubt our affair is of any interest to you. Oh, but it is. Romac's eyes narrowed. As the king's secretary, I must keep myself fully informed of everything happening in our country. I must say I find it hard to believe that any woman would want to involve herself with the general. He's from one of the cursed clans, you know. Gwenor snorted. The nerve of this man. He had black hair mixed in with grey, so he was also a descendant of one of the 3 cursed clans.
I don't frighten easily.
I suppose not. I've heard the elves are quite vicious when it comes to war, but I have to question how trustworthy the general is.
After all, we are at war with Woodwin, yet he has brought an elfin mistress to the capital.
I am not here to cause any trouble, my lord.
Romax smirked.
How about we stop with the games and tell the truth?
She arched a brow.
You first.
His mouth twisted into a sneer.
I know you're up to something. I have my own sources, you see, so I know the general's tale about you is false. You're not from Woodwin. You're the adopted sister of the Queens of Eberron and Turin. Are you here to spy for them?
No, of course not.
He scowled at her. Are you planning to tell your sisters about the curse?
No.
Why would I, when I don't believe it is real?
He stepped closer.
Then you think there's another explanation for the Queen's illness, or the deaths of her children?
Gwenor grew increasingly tense.
Perhaps.
He gave her a speculative look.
Perhaps you should ask yourself, who would benefit the most from the deaths of the royal children?
Her breath caught.
Are you saying they were murdered?
Anything's possible.
Romax shrugged. Who would gain the most, do you think?
I suppose it would be the next in line.
The heir?
Romax's eyes gleamed with malice.
Then that would be His Majesty's younger brother. I believe you know him well.
I do?
Romax chuckled. You're sleeping with him.
Gwenor stiffened. Silas was the heir? Romax's eyes widened.
The general didn't tell you?
He snorted.
I always knew he wasn't to be trusted.
Chapter 12 Gwenor attempted to appear unaffected, even though her mind was reeling. How could Silas fail to tell her something so important? He had to know she would find out.
What else is he hiding from me? How can I trust him when he doesn't trust me?
Oh dear. Romax lifted a hand to his face, doing a poor job of covering a nasty sneer.
I seem to have given you a shock.
Gwenor's sense of pride shot to the surface, giving her a boost of strength.
Shock, yes. I am definitely shocked you could suggest that someone as honourable as General Dravenko could have possibly caused harm to his brother's children. I would hate for His Majesty to hear you were spreading such a horrific rumour.
Romax's smile quickly vanished as his eyes hardened.
I see you are loyal to the General. I just hope you haven't fallen in love with him. For you must know that whoever marries him will be doomed to lose her children and go insane.
Gwenor swallowed hard.
Your concern has been noted. Good day, my lord.
She strode away, her heart pounding. Would the people here think she was trying to marry into the royal family?
Good evening, my lady. Dimitri greeted her as she came to a stop beside him.
He tilted his head, studying her.
Is something wrong?
She gave him an annoyed look.
You can't tell? Why don't you invade my thoughts and find out?
He winced.
That was never intentional, and believe me, it was damned uncomfortable. So sorry to cause you discomfort.
Exactly. If I had to hear you calling Silas, General Gorgeous, one more time, I thought I was going to puke. He smiled when she shot him a dirty look.
Seriously, though, I am glad you've learned to build a shield.
She crossed her arms, still glaring at him. He leaned close and whispered,
I don't have to read your mind to know that Romax upset you. What did the weasel say?
He inferred that Silas may have killed the king's children in order to inherit...
Bastard!
Dmitri clenched his fists. I should rearrange his face so he'll find it hard to say any more crap.
I warned him not to repeat it.
Good.